The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's great to be back with you. I'm with you today and tomorrow and all next week. And it's absolute serendipity that a guy I talk a lot about on the podcast, I just got the list of who was joining me. And straight up, straight into the fire is poor Pascal Donoghue, long-standing Minister for Finance. And of course, there's two things I've got to say on a lighter note before we start. One is I do quite a bit of private media training one-on-one. And I say, look, if you don't want to answer the question, I said, Pascal Donoghue is the best in the business. He's developed a technique where, and this is the way he does it. So you ask him a hard question, and what he does is he repeats the question. Then he comments on the question, maybe analyses the question, and then he gives you a neutral answer. So I'm going to see in the next 20 minutes how often he does that.
What hope do I have, Ivan?
Put it like this, watching it.
You're an energy, you're back in full energy, and you've understood all my tricks.
So, and also, it has to be said that I was reflecting on the situation and in my current life and existence, that your position in government across a number of governments now, really since the 2016 government, has been absolutely pivotal. You know, I would often say that Micheál and Simon are the show ponies trotting the world, but you're the adult in the room who's got to pay the bills, and you've worked with Michael McGrath and now with Jack Chambers, and you are the central point. So I find it really, really interesting talking to you, because if you say yes, it will be yes. If you say no, it will be no. So, Pascal, first of all, next Wednesday is the deadline that Trump and the EU have set for an outcome on the tariffs. You know, it's all a TV reality show. But it seemed to me when Starmer settled for 10%, that was a likely norm across Europe. What are you expecting? Are you expecting a deal on the European side? And what might we expect as a landing ground for this?
So I think an agreement is possible, but not certain. I think you make a fair point that it does appear that we are moving into a world in which the baseline tariffs that are applied to goods that are going into the United States is significantly higher for America and therefore for the world than before President Trump took office for the second time. Am I conceding that that is going to happen? No. What will the European Union looking for? The European Union will be looking for the minimum level of tariff possible, and then for sectors that are really important to us and will be making the case that they're very important to America, for special recognition of them. I think an agreement is possible, but I don't believe it's certain.
Just on that, because the biggest skin we have in the game is pharma, 54 billion of exports, whatever it is, last year. And there's been no, like with steel and cars and aluminium, 25%, and others, 10%. What is the position on pharma? Because there was some talk there was a report going to come out next December and so on. If there was 10%, would that include pharma as you understand it?
So we're making the case that it would not. And at the moment, an assessment, a report, you just said it yourself there, is being conducted by the United States government into the life science and medicine sector. And basically the argument that Ireland is making along with the European Union is that if you value affordability in medicines that can make an increasingly big difference to your life, that global supply chains have a big role to play in that. And if you want to ship those medicines to other parts of the world, having some of your supply chain outside of America is in your long-term interest for doing that. And that briefly is the case that we are making.
Okay. If there's not a deal, it's pretty grim, because if you look at the EU retaliation of the 95 billion, you're starting to get into tit for tat on very difficult territory.
That is the case, but it would be grim for both sides of the Atlantic. So it is a trade, as you know, that's worth 4 billion euro per day. If you're in a world in which a deal does not happen and you end up then in escalatory measures, though I don't believe it is certain that we would automatically get there, that means two things. It means that the price of goods will go up on both sides of the Atlantic, which will have an impact on inflation. And you know the damage that can cause to an economy and the challenges it can cause to a society. But the second thing, and I made a presentation about this yesterday at a trade forum meeting, the level of uncertainty in the world regarding the conduct of trade and the future for our global economy is actually now at a higher level than it was during COVID, which is incredible when you think about that. If we're in a world in which an agreement is not reached and escalation takes place, those sentiments will only deteriorate further. And if that happens, there's a real risk that that will be damaging for growth and for jobs. And there isn't any politician who's involved in these negotiations at the moment on both sides of the table that wants that to happen. So it is a challenging scenario. We published figures a few weeks ago here in Ireland.
A forecast, was it, of the impact on the GDP?
So we did two things. We said, if there's not tariffs, what will our economy look like? And if tariffs are applied, and what we modelled it is on 10% on everything going into the US and 60% between the US and China. And what that would mean for the Irish economy, very broadly, is that we would still grow, but we would grow at a lower pace. We would still have a record number of people at work, but probably up to 75,000 fewer jobs created across the next 2 to 4 years. And then we would see our public finances still be in surplus, but a smaller surplus. So thank God we're approaching all of this with much of our economy in a strong place. But that is the tangible reality of what it means. We have to be honest about it, but also have to be confident about our ability to get through it, which is what we're working hard to do.
And your department publishes quarterly figures. I've just noticed over the last 18 months, given the uncertainty of this, private sector capital investment has really gone down quite remarkably.
It has, and two things are now happening. Firstly, levels of savings are beginning to edge up again, and they had begun to fall from the record level they were at during the pandemic. And the second thing then is private capital investment. And basically what we mean by that is the investment that entrepreneurs, that business owners, big and small, are making in factories and machinery and their own people, that has paused. And that, again, is the tangible example of what I meant when I said earlier on that uncertainty is going up, which is why, despite everything, it is in the best interest of everybody to try to get an agreement.
Now, the spat this week in domestic politics. So the Minister for Higher and Further Education, James Lawless, says, look, there's no cost of living package. This means that the one grand subsidy was there is not going to be there this year, and it'll go back from 2 grand to 3 grand. Right, there's 44,000 students to get it free, but for those who pay, that would apply. And I thought that was straightforward. If there's no cost of living, your electricity bill and everything is going to go up. And then that turned into 2 days on Liveline, the opposition go berserk and all the rest of it, which I thought was straightforward enough, right? Then Simon Harris gets involved and puts out a voice message and says, well, actually, in the programme for government, we're going to reduce student fees, and that I'm looking to the budget to start that process. And I see now there might be two different tiers and there's all sorts of things. What's happening?
It's very clear. What is very clear is that every budget that we do does try to help with the various issues that our society is facing. And the programme for government makes clear that budget by budget, we want to make student life more affordable for students and for parents. So that budget, each budget will contain measures to help with that. But what we can't do and won't be doing is having an additional budget on top of that with one-off measures. We have to move to a more normal budgetary cycle that we've been in every other year, except for the last few years, where we make decisions on budget day about measures that are going to be permanent, that we're confident that we can afford. And we will engage in that process now. Myself and Minister Jack Chambers will be in the middle of it, agree everything within government and present it then in October.
So it could be 2 grand, or it could be 2.5 grand, or it could be 3 grand. Well, nobody knows. It's a budget decision, is that it?
Well, it is a budget decision, but that is the same it has always been. So if you look at every other time we have made various decisions in relation to affordability of going to college, they've been made in October. They've been made on budget day. And that has to remain to be the case.
Has budget day been set this year?
Not yet, okay. But it will be in early October.
Okay.
And you're
But if you're enrolling in September, October, you maybe have to pay up front. Like, is it based on the 3 grand subject to change?
That is a fair point. You do have to pay up front, but that's always been the case. But critically, what many students do is they pay in instalments.
But I'm just not clear what the level is going to be.
Well, we'll be deciding that. I mean, if it goes back from €2,000, it is currently €2,000.
Right.
There was a temporary deduction in place that would make us €3,000. But the government has to decide what that level of fees will be. And we haven't done it because we haven't done the budget. And what we do is this is a standard budget decision that we make every year. And you could ask me what the decision will be in relation to social welfare, in relation to taxation. And the answer will be the same, that we decide all these things on budget day.
Well, one of the things that maybe is clear is there was a recent Fine Gael parliamentary party, and I just see today the Restaurants Association of Ireland are out again. I actually chaired the day of action. They had 18 speakers and someone had to Q&A them so that they wouldn't go on all day. Protest outside the Dáil, 1,200 people, which was a campaign to get the VAT back from 13.5. So there was a lot of, this became an election issue, and Fine Gael promised to reduce it to 9 and maybe hairdressing salons as well. I understand that that has been doubled down on as an announcement at the recent Fine Gael parliamentary party. Is it your intention to proceed as the RAI want? They feel it's been pushed too far into the future, but that that promise will be honoured.
So I've answered this question in the Dáil and said that it is certainly my intention to respond back from a VAT perspective to the challenges the hospitality sector faces. But no decisions are made in relation to it. And all these decisions are made on budget day. And what we have to do is ensure that if we make a decision like that permanently on budget day, that it's affordable. And we explain then what are the other things that we are not going to do. And all these things, feedback.
Well, sorry, this is in a different category. It's in the programme for government.
It is.
It's a Fine Gael pretty high up there issue. I mean, like, it's not as if this has been landed on you.
But that's why I'm being clear in my answer and saying what my intention is. But I'm also saying we make these decisions on budget day and we have to ensure that everything that we do is affordable in the round. And that's what I'm confident we will be able to do, that we will present a budget that will be responsible, that will be safe, and will also explain the different trade-offs that are there. The final very quick point I would make is a theme of this particular budget is going to be, how we support jobs, how we support an enterprise culture here in Ireland. If you look at the first part of our interview here, you've correctly called out the big risks that are there from an economic point of view and what that means to jobs within our country. And a key element of our budget will be how we deal with those challenges, the protection and the retention of jobs.
Okay. So in my world, which is the corporate world, really, that interacts with government, whether it's the construction sector, whether it's manufacturing or whatever, there are two schools of thought on Pascal and his 10-year legacy. One is, hey, any country in Europe would love to have our public finances in the surplus he's in. We have full employment, happy days coming from the Troika days. This is all good. That's one camp. Then I meet other camp, which may not be so vocal to your face. And they say, well, actually, the biggest problem in the country is housing. And actually, this isn't new. Graham Doyle went into the Department of Housing in 2020 as an emergency thing. And that's when Fianna Fáil came in. But back in the day with Owen Murphy and Simon Coveney, housing was an emergency 2016, 2017. And what your critics say is that actually at every hand's turn, Croí Cónaithe, which was 180 grand subsidy on apartments, lately this PPP scheme for 1,000 houses that you've said no to, that were actually well negotiated through the approved housing bodies, that in all these things, the dark hand. Take the infrastructure thing. You gave money to Irish Water, but it was to pay down the debt. It wasn't actually for new projects and so on. So the charge is this, that while, yes, housing is the number one issue, that in many specific issues, and the latest being apartment construction, this is the critical area where the numbers have not delivered, that you need to do something to stimulate right now the market, be it a VAT holiday if you start and you take it off just for apartments or Section 23 or whatever it might be. Are you minded to listen to that criticism? And secondly, is it fair? And secondly, will you do something specifically to immediately fire start apartments?
Number one, that is a critique that's made directly to me. There are many other schools of thought out there regarding what I've done and how I've done, and I engage with it directly. Number two, do I believe it is fair? I look at what we have done in the significant increase in funding that has been made available to the Department of Housing, the introduction, retention and strengthening of measures like Help to Buy, and the work that we have done in setting up the land development agencies, organisations like House Building Finance Ireland, to provide more credit and intervention into the housing market. That's why we've seen 200,000 homes being built since 2016. So, but we need to do more. That's the argument I'd make in relation to my role on it. And thirdly, is it my intention to do more? Every single budget will contain measures in relation to housing. Every budget I've done always has. But the specificity of it, exactly what we are going to do, has to be agreed and worked out within government and has to form part of Budget Day. And that's what we are doing.
But on apartments, the issue is this. The viability of apartments is 550 grand. They're very expensive to build. Unlike a scheme of houses where you can build 20 and sell them on, you can't sell your first apartment till you've built your last one because it's in a block. And there are particular viability issues here. In Dublin, most of the planning permission policy was to support apartments. There is a particular problem there. Like if you say, where has this gone wrong? We promised 41,000 houses. We end up with 30,000 houses. What is the difference is actually apartments. Do you accept that you will, maybe as a once-off thing, you need to stimulate apartment construction and viability?
So I accept there is a challenge and a very clear challenge in relation to the delivery of apartments within our country. It's why I've been one of the few voices over recent years making the case for the role of private capital, the need for pension and savings in other parts of the world to build apartments in Ireland. Where I do differ with you is the assumption within your argument, which I'm sure we're going to tease out now, that all of the viability challenges are caused by money. I look at decisions that we have to weigh up now. We've made a decision in relation to rent pressure zones. We have to look at a number of other matters. We have to look at what are the decisions that we make from a planning and design point of view that contribute to viability issues. We have to look at the availability of zoned land and the cost of that land. And we have to look at what is the cost and challenges and availability of infrastructure. And I believe all of those issues play as much a role in relation to the viability challenges I know are building in apartment construction as those areas that I'm directly responsible for. And myself and Minister Jack Chambers, working with Minister Brown, have to work on all of these matters together.
Yeah, and look, they actually scrapped Build to Rent, which is studio apartments. That is a dual aspect, the design spec. All of those are issues. But put it like this, there's 25,000 apartments for which have planning permission. It's being extended. People tell me who actually have a track record of building these. I could bring them to different parts of Dublin. These are really credible people.
I know them.
They make the case to me. You know, Hines and all these different ones. Like the point is this, just to get this through and to get things, you know, in the here and now, because a lot of things will take effect after 28 and so on, that you understand the politics of this is quite urgent for you.
I keenly understand the politics of it, but what is as and more important than the politics is what it means for people who want to own, buy and rent an apartment on a social level. It's of the most profound importance for us. And then what it means for our economy as well. So, of course, I understand it. I'm simply making the case back to you that there are many different ingredients into the challenges that we have with viability. We need to make progress on all of them. There are some things we did in the past when trying to address viability that created a whole other set of issues and problems for us that led to such difficulty for so long. And we need to work on this in the right way.
OK, the other line of criticism is this, that as the gatekeeper on the public finances in both your two department roles, if you look at it before and after 2019 pre-COVID, leaving aside all back to normal now, 2025, in top headline terms, total public expenditure has gone from 70 billion to 110 billion. You have a situation that numbers of public servants have gone up by 50,000. And I'm not talking necessarily about, like, some of the figures on civil servants are quite extraordinary, HEO, AP level and so on. The point is this, that we got this massive largesse, 3 decades of successful FDI policy. Government I was a member of doing the 12.5% Rory Quinn and layers of good governance to get the biggest economic miracle in Europe. So you were the beneficiary of this windfall. Corporation tax 2014, 10 years ago, was 4 billion. Last year was 39.1 billion, if you include the Apple money. So, wow. So, my point is this. When you look at the expenditure side, you've actually spent all the money and we've very little to show for it. Whether it's on migrants or whether it's on extra public servants, that, and this is the IFAC argument, that you know, some of this is windfall, it mightn't last. And I accept you set up two funds, but, you know, have you been a bit lax of just allowing more blotting paper and cotton wool get into the public sector, that all the rigour for value for money has been lip service?
I've been more than the beneficiary of us, and I'll come on to that charge in a moment. I've been a contributor to it as well. I've overseen our tax policy during that period and made a set of decisions in relation to corporate tax and our broader tax policy that has helped create the environment in which those receipts have continued to grow, building on the work that all of my predecessors have done. In relation to what that money was used for, I brought our public finances from deficit to surplus twice, and we now have one of the largest surpluses within the European Union. And we have set aside already by the end of this year, 16 billion euro, 15 to 16 billion euro for the moment and when things begin to get hard again. In relation to growth in public expenditure has grown. But public expenditure has grown because the amount of money we're spending in capital investment, which goes back to the housing issue you've raised there, has gone from 4 billion euro to 16 billion euro per year. Current expenditure has gone up. But current expenditure has gone up at a time our population has grown as well. We've seen waiting lists for key procedures within our health service begin to stabilise and fall. We see the education levels that we have in our schools and in our universities continue to look so favourable to other parts of Europe. And we have seen really important projects. For example, I will point to the National Broadband Plan delivered. So that's the argument that I would make back. As Finance Minister, it's about finding the balance. I'm responsible for an economy within a society, not a society that exists within an economy. And not only do I have to keep our public finances safe, I have to make the argument and win the argument for keeping our public finances safe over many, many years. And that's what I've aimed to do.
Well, what the Fiscal Advisory Council specifically charges, that every spending cap you put in place of 5%, you broke it. Mm-hmm. Secondly, and you were particularly bad in the election year, and they say that on 2025, on your watch, I think expenditure is up another 3.9 billion. And you actually haven't put in place a spending cap yet on an annual basis.
Sure. So let's look at each of those in turn. So firstly, I don't recall that many people coming out when I brought in, along with Leo Varadkar, a very conservative budget on the eve of a hard Brexit. I don't recall in the year after that then, IFAC and others saying, maybe IFAC did in fairness to them, that that was the right decision at that point in time, even though it was the right thing to do for our economy and for our country at that point. And if you look at where we are now in our spending cap to deal with that one. So I brought in the spending rule of 5% in 2020. Ivan, if I had stuck to that 5% rule at a time of a pandemic and at a time in which inflation went to 10%, there would be no economist, and certainly nobody who thinks about economics, that would have said I would have had the right overall macroeconomic policy to stick at 5% when a pandemic was closing down our economy and when inflation went from 2 to 3% to 10%.
Pandemic was over in 22. It finished up in 22.
Which was during the period.
Since then, you really got saucy.
And since then, inflation went from 2% to 5% to 10%. So if I'd stuck with the 5% rule during that period, two things would have happened. The first one is living standards within our country would have went down at a time in which the finances would have improved. And the second thing is the real value of our public services would have deteriorated. It would have went down because current spending would have been below the rate of inflation. And if you look at where we are now, with a surplus of 8.6 billion euro for the last 2 years, that is a very large, it's a reasonably good share of all the tax that we collect in Ireland. It's one of the highest, I think it's the second highest surplus within the European Union. That surplus is at the maximum level that I believe is politically to achieve while maintaining a consensus within our society about public finances being safe and then trying to deal with every other issue you've raised with me correctly in the interview regarding how we invest in our public services and how we spend on capital, how we build more schools, more homes.
Some lighter things. The presidency is coming up. It seems Fine Gael will be the first to select a candidate. You'll involve, you've put in place the Electoral College for it. Looks like Sean Kelly and Mairead McGuinness. Any opinions on that? Or who might appear or anything else?
That we've a couple of fantastic candidates. The selection procedure for that is in our party is going to be complete in the next few days. I believe either of them would make fantastic.
And do you think Fianna Fáil should just fall in line and have one government candidate? Or
oh,
what?
My God, Ivan. The last thing I'm going to do is offer advice to what Fianna Fáil should do on that matter. I know better than that by now.
OK. Now, the other thing
how
is...
How am I doing, by the way, in terms of the appraisal you offered earlier on?
100% adherence to... And in fact, I deliberately did it because you actually went out of your way not to do it. Now, on Monday... You have had, I think, the first Irishman to hold the position of, and I don't know the difference between the Eurogroup and Ecofin. You can maybe explain that to me. Is it just the monetary union or whatever? But you've had two and a half year terms and you're up again. My sources say that you have 12 votes in the bag, and the Spanish upstart will be get their comeuppance. But tell me, is that am I wrong about that? The other thing is that I'm persistently hearing that Christine Lagarde retires at the end of October, 31st of October 2026, which is if you look at Pascal's career, you've nearly gone as far as you can go, except for the top job. That would be a massive plus for Ireland to get that prestigious job. And that I'm told, given your Eurogroup chairmanship, that you have a good chance. What say you?
So firstly, the Eurogroup election on Monday, I'm very grateful for the support that I've got from many, many colleagues to continue with my work. I will be working hard and continuing to make the case for that. Thank them and other European governments for the support they're giving me. The difference between Eurogroup and Ecofin is Eurogroup contains the member states that have the euro. Ecofin is all finance ministers of the European Union. Okay. So you're right. It just refers to currency, the currency difference. And I'm very hopeful of being able to continue with my work in relation to the president of the ECB role. That is only speculation. The next governor of the Central Bank of Europe, I believe, will be somebody who's already a central bank governor or somebody who's run a central bank. I have not.
But the word on the street is, if you can get the right gig, whether it's the IMF or whatever, you know, in the international interest, you might be prepared, because you've done as much as you can do. Like, you're not going to go back to deeper, are you?
Well, I've plenty. Well, I mean, I've plenty ahead of me and plenty that I want to do in the job that I'm in at the moment. And my ambition is to continue to do a good job as Minister for Finance for Ireland. That's my ambition. That's what I'm putting all my energy into. Either.
Okay, well, I know you've got to take leaders' questions in the Dáil, which will be much more formidable. Mary Lou is probably in bad form these days. Very, very sad news breaking insofar as that one of Liverpool's best strikers, a young man, 28 years of age, Diogo Jota, has been killed in a car crash. And one can only think, for his own family and for all Reds fans, that is really, really upsetting.
It's really, I've just seen it come up on the television screen. It's an unbelievably talented footballer.
And real pace. And gets a lot of goals and assists.
I'm reminded of the tragedy that Liverpool endured at a moment of their greatest triumph with the awful incident that happened in the parade through their great city. And there'll be lots of Liverpool fans and members of the Portuguese community that will be really upset by this.
Absolutely.
It's a reminder of what matters in life and how suddenly things can change. And may he rest in peace. It's terrible news.
Indeed, indeed. And we'll have more updates on that throughout the day on News Talk. My thanks to Minister for Finance, Pascal Donohue.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.